The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Going to have a fantastic show today, David McKnight. Yes, he's going to be live. We're going to be YouTubing it on his channel at some point. I'll let you all know about that so you can dig it up. But yeah, we're going to have a fantastic show. Of course, he is the author of The Power of Zero, the best-selling book, and I'll give his little bio in just a second. Let's do a little news of the week brought to you by Kenny Bland Auctions. They're your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate. Visit them online. It's a great auction going on again right now at KennyBlandAuctions.com. And my guest from last week, Lance Like at the Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family that peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Give him a call at 812-323-8300. Now, there's been a lot going on in the markets. I'm actually going to record a video with Hot Rod to send out to all of our contacts at our office. I believe we're going to do it today and probably send it out next week. But, man, a lot going on in the markets. They finally decided, right? Rates are going to continue to go up. They're going to stay up longer for higher for longer and all that good stuff. But the thing that is crazy is that losses on longer dated treasuries are beginning to rival some of the most notorious market meltdowns in entire U.S. history. Bonds maturing in 10 years or more have slumped more than 46% since March of 2020. So what does that mean? When you look at your bond statement or your statement, you're like, my stocks are down and my bonds are down. It stinks, I understand. That's just shy of the 49% plunge in the U.S. stocks in the aftermath of the dot-com bust back at the turn of the century. We all remember that. The rout in 30-year bonds has even been worse, tumbling 53%, nearly 57% slump in equities during the depth of the financial crisis. So what's happening? Interest rates go up, bond values go down. So if you think about it, if you're sitting here 30 years out and you own a bond paying 2%, it's going to be down a lot. For every 1% rise in interest rates, bonds will go down by 10 to 12%. So rates have jumped up, what, 2, 3, 4%? There you go. Do the math on that one. It stinks. To the extent of the losses, it's a stark reminder of the risk that comes into anything, right? Not just stocks, but bonds as well. Now, here's the bright, shining star at the end of all this. Just in case you own an individual bond, and a bond fund is a bond fund. Hopefully, if money comes in, they're buying better yields, and you know that'll bail you out over time. But if you own an individual bond and it has a fixed maturity, you'll get your money back as long as the company or the municipality doesn't go out of business. So let's say you owned a bond. Let's say it was $100,000 and it shows worth $60,000 on your statement and it's paying you 2%. Well, you're still going to get 2% on your $100,000, which isn't great in this market, I understand. But over time, that $60,000 will return as it gets closer to maturity to $100,000. So that's my little star of the day, shining star, to give you a little bit of hope. I know it's been crazy out there. Volatility has jumped up nutso. Was so low for so long, and now Rod told me it's up nearly around 20, which means we are in a very, very volatile market. So, listen, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to David McKnight. He graduated from Brigham Young University with honors in 1997, and he has helped thousands and thousands of Americans on the road to the 0% tax bracket. Of course, he's made frequent appearances on Forbes, USA Today, New York Times, Fox Business, CBS, Bloomberg, and more. And, of course, has been a contributor to the show here, Your Money with David Hayes. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get David McKnight online. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. David McKnight's joining me live. Of course, he is the author of The Power of Zero. He's been on just about every national publication you can imagine. Best-selling author. Lots of different books that he's written. And obviously, he's been teaching thousands and thousands of Americans and financial advisors on how to get out of the crosshairs of higher taxes coming. Dave, appreciate you being on the show again. I know you've got an incredibly busy schedule.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me back.
Well, listen, I got so much information here that I wanted to go over with you today, and I don't even know where to start, to be quite honest. But I was looking at some information from previous times that we got together, and I was thinking about starting off with, you know, when I first read your book years ago, and it talked about how we are just a few years away, like 7 years away or 9 years away, from the budget of four things, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and interest on the debt, absorbing pretty much all the revenue that's coming into the coffers. Back then, it was like 77%. And, you know, here we are, right? We're right on the cusp of that. We're $32, $33 trillion in debt, continue to spend. Tax rates are a historic low. We have you have a clock. I love it on your website that says what does it say? When I pulled it up today, it said 2 years, 2 months, and 27 days until the clock rings and the tax code goes back to at least where it was before. But yeah, where are we today on those numbers?
Well, it's as you can imagine, it's only gotten worse. When I first started writing about this, what I was talking about is, as you mentioned, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, interest on the debt, basically took up 92% of the tax revenues that are coming in. As of this year, it's actually 100% of the tax revenue that's coming in, which was why we have to borrow over $1 trillion to pay for everything else, right? So Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, these are all non-discretionary spending. Interest on the national debt's non-discretionary spending. The thing that's scary about it is we don't have control over it. We can't just say, we're going to cut back this year like we might say military. These are things that require an act of Congress to change, because these things are all, you know, it's required to pay by law, and they're indexed to inflation by law. And so just by definition, as baby boomers move out of the workforce onto the rolls of the entitlement programs, as inflation goes up, the cost of these programs starts to explode and consumes a greater and greater portion of the tax revenues coming in. So as of right now, it's 100% of revenue flowing into the U.S. Treasury goes to pay for those four things. And anything that we want to pay for above and beyond that, we have to borrow money to do so.
So I don't know if you ever followed Mick Higley. He wrote By the Numbers for years and years and years. He actually retired, but he sent me, and you may have gotten this, he said he couldn't help himself to send this one piece of information out. He says, can't spend it fast enough. On the day President Joe Biden signed the legislation to end the debt ceiling debate back in June, the U.S. was $31.467 trillion in debt. And on Thursday, just 33 days later, this was on the 6th of July, the national debt had grown to $32.4 trillion, increase of $1 trillion in 33 days. Now, that was some pent-up demand as well, but this is out of control. And you've gone over and over this with me and everyone else in America that, you know, there's only a few things you can do. One, cut spending, and you just said that that's very, very difficult to do. Two, increase taxes. Or three, reduce entitlements. Say you make too much money, you're not going to get Social Security. But there's no appetite for that, as we well know, because that's the people that vote. If I'm 60 years old and I have $10 million, I'm not going to be real excited about trying to propose or vote for someone that's going to eliminate my Social Security, unless I just have a really good, generous heart and want to make things better for my kids and grandchildren. So, yeah, Dave, I mean, I don't know how we're going to fix this problem. I was looking through some of your stuff, the podcasts and different things, of course, I follow. But, you know, how quickly can we solve these problems? And the longer we wait, the harder and more difficult it becomes.
Yeah, well, it's how quickly we could solve it right away. I mean, David Walker, former Comptroller General of the federal government, has said as much. He says you could, you could put some sort of constitutional amendment in place that says that no one in Congress gets paid unless we balance the budget. I mean, there's some really austere things that could be done to fix it. But I don't know that politicians have the appetite or willpower or leadership, for that matter, to be able to make these tough decisions. And I think they fear the electorate more than they fear going bankrupt, unfortunately. And there's a fourth option that they could resort to, and that's, or sometimes people think they can resort to, and that's to print our way out of it. This is sort of the modern monetary theory approach. And the problem with that approach is that, you know, money is valuable because it's scarce. You print more of it, becomes less scarce, then you get inflation. And the problem is, like I said earlier, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid are all linked to inflation by law. And so as you increase the money supply to pay for these things, it increases the cost of these programs commensurately because inflation goes up. So it's like a dog chasing its tail. You never really have enough money to pay for these things. So you can't really print your way out of it. What does that lead? You can either increase taxes, reduce spending, some combination of the two. And none of those options are really all that appetizing for any parties involved. And so we're sort of marching into this semi-apocalyptic future where something's going to give. And I think that eventually what's going to happen is we're going to get to the point where we will not have enough revenue coming into the U.S. Treasury to pay for these things. And it'll be sort of like every time we've ever almost defaulted on the debt. I remember one time I was watching CNN, and up in the upper left-hand corner of the clock, it says we default on our debt in 29 minutes. And it's always at the 11th hour that try to fix these things. And so I think that somewhere around 2030, when push comes to shove and all of these things come to a head, and we've got this perfect storm of, you know, baby boomers retiring and all these confluence of events, that they're going to be forced to do something. So I think we probably have another 8 years to get our house in order.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to get David's opinion of what some of these rule changes, I think, did to set us up to pay for all this, maybe way down the road. And maybe 8 years isn't quite long enough for all this to come to roost. But I'll get his opinion on why age 75 for required minimum distributions. If we need the money so bad now, why in the world would we allow people to delay taking it out till 75? I have some great demographics to share with you when we come back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes, the great David McKnight, the author of Power of Zero. And Dave, last time I saw you in person, we both shared the same footwear. I'm going to show you this here real quick. I'm getting too old, Dave. I'm 53. I can't get my foot up high enough. For those of you listening, we are on Zoom with David McKnight. Are you in Puerto Rico or are you on the road somewhere?
I sure am. Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico. I love it.
Call me 95 degrees.
Oh, geez. We're going to be down to 50 this weekend, I understand. All right, Dave, a lot of rules changed with retirement accounts. Of course, we've been proponents, and of course, I'm a disciple of David McKnight on moving money from taxable to tax-free. Never put a dollar away tax-deferred. Always pay the tax now. We're at these historically low numbers, and we have 2 years and 2 months left before the tax code expires and it goes back to where it was before. And as you've said before, Dave, that doesn't keep you up at night. We're going to 39.6%. It's really what the Congressional Budget Office says every single year, where tax rates have to be for simply to pay for the things we've already promised. That's not keeping it. It's where they could go. And I think I'm going to get your opinion on this rule change in a second. But if you say taxes have to double, and literally that's what they say every single year, and you're like, there's no way the taxes will ever double. Would you please take a look at history, right, Dave?
Right. Yeah, I mean, we're sort of lulled into, at least in the last 20 years or so, we're lulled into this idea that, hey, tax rates are low. They've always been this low. And until you sort of zoom back and look at history, you realize, hey, you know, just in the wake of World War II, tax rates were as high as 94%. As recently as the 70s, they were as high as 70%. So who's to say we couldn't go back to those types of rates in the future? I've done lots of YouTube videos where I basically make the case we're going to have European style taxes of 50%, but we're just not going to get all the goodies in exchange for that 50%. We're not going to get paid maternity. We're not going to get, workers' compensation, all these great things that you get, universal health care. And we're going to be paying for debt. And that's what we're going to get in exchange for our 50%. And so, yeah, it's a dire outlook.
Yeah. And I think about it like interest rates, right? We've been lulled into this environment of low interest rates for so long, and all of a sudden interest rates are so high and it's this massive shock. And can you imagine if we just stayed at these levels or even higher levels for the next 20 years, it'd devastate people. So I think taxes are a lot the same way. Who wouldn't have taken a mortgage out at 2%, but who wants to take one out at 8% or 10% or 12%? Or history tells you back in the early 80s, it was like 14 or 17%. My dad was in banking back then. He can tell you the horror stories of that. All right, so we always think about how we're going to pay for all this. The low-hanging fruit is retirement accounts. There is around $30 to $31 trillion reportedly in tax-deferred retirement accounts. I did a podcast on, is the IRS spying on your IRA? And the answer was yes, because every May they send a 5498 out that says, hey, guess what? This is how much I have in my deferred retirement accounts. They are spying on it. Well, you have to take minimum distributions. Remember, you have a partner in your retirement account. It is the IRS. They get to tell you how much is theirs and when you have to take it out, which is a bad deal. I'd never make that deal with any other partner. And they used to be 70.5, went to 72, then 73, and for anyone born in 1960 or after, now it's 75. So I'm thinking, wait a second, the peak of the baby boom generation was born around 60, 61. That's a lot of people with a lot of money. Well, then I looked at some projections, and it was projected they potentially could have up to $80 trillion in tax-deferred retirement accounts by the time they're 75. So how old are those folks right now? They're 61 to 65. So here's my theory. You let 10 years roll by, and no one does anything because everyone's stupid, and they just kind of keep pulling the window shade down, as you've said in your book. And all of a sudden, they're 75, and they have to start taking money out. Well, number one, they have to take more out because they're older. Two, they're going to die sooner. And then three, the rules changed on inherited IRAs, so the kids are going to have to take it out quicker. So my theory is you have this big, massive bubble of money that's going to be percolating, and around in, well, it would be, you know, these people, you know, 10 years from now, they're going to have to start taking it out. And then the next year it's more, and next year it's more, and next year it's more, and that solves a big problem. So my joke is these people in Washington playing these budgets might be smarter than you think. Like they're licking their chops. What do you think about that, Dave?
That's a really interesting theory, and you know, makes a lot of sense.
I want you to start using it, by the way.
Okay, I will.
Perfect. I've stole everything you've ever done, Dave. So why not steal something I've done for once?
It's a great theory. This much we know is that 80% of Americans don't wait until 72 or 73 or 75 to draw down that money, right? So they have to take more than their required minimum distribution. So you know, a lot of these people are going to be drawing down those dollars years in advance of whenever their RMDs are. However, you're right. There are a lot of people that don't need that money and won't take that money out unless forced to do so. But you know what? I also believe that the federal government needs a lot of money between now and when these folks turn 75, because, you know, between now and 2033, the national debt grows by $2 trillion per year.
Right.
So they're going to need money to come from somewhere. It's already starting to put a lot of pressure on the fiscal outlook of the country. Interest rates are going to keep going up. I saw something that said that the interest rates could go up to 14% because countries aren't willing to loan us money anymore, because they don't think we can pay it back, or they think they're going to pay it back with inflated dollars or what have you. And so it's once again, this massive confluence of factors that's going to come to a head around 2030. I just think we need a lot more revenue in the short term, but certainly, I mean, you're right. The whole reason they have RMDs is because the federal government wants to have a predictable source of revenue
right
years down the road, so that they can understand how they're going to fund all these unfunded obligations.
I've promoted your documentary, The Tax Train Is Coming, and I know a lot of people have watched it. It's great. It's a great documentary. I know it's still what's interesting, and when you watch it right now, it's almost it's still relevant, but the numbers have moved so quickly.
The numbers are all out of whack.
Jeez,
right?
It's like, holy heck. So I love one of the stories, and I use this in some of my talks that I give, but one of the stories that you tell is your story of the Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner, and how it's so relative to how Americans behave and act when it comes to these kinds of issues, and many, many more. Please share that story with our listeners, Dave.
Sure, you bet. I often use this in all of my talks as well. I talk about how not long ago I was watching The Roadrunner, and we know who always is trying to kill the Roadrunner. That's Wile E. Coyote. And Wile E. Coyote is up to his usual no good, trying to kill the Roadrunner, and he's building a bomb with which to do so, made, of course, by Acme, inside a shed that was also made by Acme. And he was so focused and intent on finishing this bomb that he didn't realize that the Roadrunner had pushed his shed onto a train track. And he was so focused and intent on finishing this bomb that he also didn't realize until the last possible moment that there was a huge freight train bearing down on his shack. And I always ask the audience, if you found yourselves on a train track with a huge freight train bearing down on you, what would you do? And they always say, oh, we would get off the tracks. Exactly right. I go back to the coyote. Coyote sees this huge freight train bearing down on him, and instead of jumping out of the way, what does he do? He simply pulls down the window shade, thinking that the act of doing so would make the problem go away. Did the problem go away? No. Of course, there's a big explosion. Does the coyote ever really die? No. It's frustrating, but as the smoke cleared away, you could see him sort of limping off screen, very much the worse for wear. And the reason I bring this up is because as Americans who've done the lion's share of our savings for retirement, what we call tax-deferred vehicles, like 401ks and IRAs, we have a very real tax freight train that's bearing down on us. And we got a couple of choices of what we can do. We could pretend like the problem doesn't really exist. We could pretend like the math to which people like David Walker have referred to over time doesn't really add up. But that's a little bit like pulling down that window shade, or you can implement some strategies starting right now to help get yourselves off the tracks and shield yourself from the impact of higher taxes.
Well, that's a great segue. We're going to take a quick break, come back, talk about some of those things we can do to get out of the crosshairs of these higher taxes coming and off the track so we don't get blown up in a shed and all our money goes with it. We'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. I'm with David McKnight, the author of Power of Zero. Of course, David's been in and on just about everything in this country, from Forbes, CNBC, everywhere he's been, and he's on stages everywhere I turn. Of course, he's a podcaster as well, The Power of Zero. Just go check it out, Power of Zero. You can Google it. It's there. It's the first thing that comes up. Become a follower and listener. And I know a lot of listeners, Dave, are followers and listeners to your podcast. We kind of cross-pollinate when it comes to that. So we were talking about pulling the window shade down and pretending like this problem doesn't exist, but the problem does exist, and we are sitting with tons of money in tax-deferred retirement accounts. So let's talk about some basics on how to move yourself off of those train tracks. I'll let you take it.
Sure. I think it begins with the acknowledgement, number one, that tax rates are going up. There's, mathematically speaking, there's no way around it. So we have to acknowledge that. Number two, we also have to acknowledge that in a rising tax rate environment, there's an ideal amount of money to have in each of your three buckets. I talk about this in the book, taxable, tax-deferred, tax-free. Taxable is going to be, you know, your emergency funds, tax-deferred, 401ks and IRAs. And then tax-free, these are our you know, Roth accounts and some types of life insurance accounts, so on and so forth. And so I really make the case that you should only have 6 months worth of living expenses inside your taxable bucket. And your tax-deferred bucket, I like to say you should have a balance that's low enough that required minimum distributions at 75 are equal to or less than whatever your standard deduction happens to be in that year.
Well, what your charitable giving is, too. Charitable giving. That's sure. One thing, right? I know that you can give money from the IRA at 70.5 directly to a charity without any taxes, so it can become your charitable giving account. And your it's a great tool for that. Go ahead.
And really, I make the case that anything above and beyond those ideal amounts, which is 6 months in your taxable bucket, and for most married couples, around $350,000 in your tax-deferred bucket, should be systematically repositioned to tax-free. You don't want to do it all at once. You want to do it little by little. You want to do it slowly enough that you don't rise into a tax bracket that gives you heartburn, but you want to do it quickly enough that you get all the heavy lifting done before about 2030, when we believe that tax rates are going to go up for good. And so I really subscribe to between 5 and 6 different streams of tax-free income. If you know, we can go through them. I really love the Roth IRA. I think that as long as you're below the modified adjusted gross income limits, you should not let a year go by where you're not contributing to a Roth IRA. I love Roth 401ks because you get the match. I love Roth conversions because they can be the real workhorse in getting lots of money shifted to tax-free. Mm-hmm. We talk about something called the life insurance retirement plan, which grows tax-free. It's a life insurance policy that can give you your death benefit in advance of your death. For the purpose of paying for long-term care. In the meantime, your money's growing safely and productively. You can take it out tax-free. And the last one I like to talk about is tax-free Social Security. A lot of people don't realize their Social Security gets taxed, but if you're taking too much money out of your IRAs and 401ks in retirement, it will cause Social Security taxation. If you take money out of, instead of true tax-free accounts like Roth IRAs, Roth 401ks, then your Social Security doesn't get taxed. And so I really like to take advantage of every nook and cranny inside the IRS tax code in an attempt to get you at or near the 0% tax bracket. 0% tax bracket is a cool thing because if tax rates double, like some people are predicting, 2 times 0 is still 0.
And we are 2 months and 27 days away from the bell ringing on this year. And you mentioned never letting a year go by that you don't take advantage of doing a Roth IRA if you're eligible. Folks, this is like a gift card you've been given. If you don't use it by the end of this year, and that is through a Roth conversion or some other repositioning of your dollars to tax-free, you're a fool. You missed out. And then we have 2 years left. David, there's been some rumblings about maybe keeping the standard deduction the way it is. Because, again, when we ring the bell at 2025, in 2026, the standard deduction gets cut in half. The tax rates get shuffled around. They go a little higher. They widen. They get shorter, whatever. But there has been some rumblings I've heard about maybe keeping the standard deduction because it's been so great for people, like less than, 14% of Americans actually file a long form now, and expanding the lower tax brackets, maybe the 12, the 22, or maybe even the 24. Have you heard anything or caught wind of that potentially happening?
I haven't heard anything about the tax brackets. My prediction is that they will extend the tax cuts, the Trump tax cuts, for anyone making lower than $400,000. So really, that's anybody in the current 24% tax bracket or lower. If they allow those tax cuts to expire on those people, people have short memories. It's going to feel like tantamount to a tax increase. It's going to feel like their taxes got raised, and that's going to, you know, get some people voted out of office. And so the other thing that will likely happen, and this is slated to happen if nothing else changes, is the standard deduction will revert to what it was in 2017. They'll increase it for inflation. Mm-hmm. They'll restore the personal exemptions. So I think what people will likely experience is a standard deduction plus personal exemptions that's fairly close to the current standard deduction. And of course, adjusting everything for inflation. But I think that the rich are going to experience a tax increase, and it's just going to go up from there. But I think that middle class will likely experience level tax rates through 2030. There's no guarantee on that. But I think that the whole reason they did these tax cuts was primarily a benefit for a huge swath of middle-class Americans. And I think they're going to extend those tax cuts. Nothing's for sure, but that's what my gut tells me.
Well, and it obviously was more money in people's pockets. The economy took off. I mean, there's a lot of other factors there as well. Let's take another break. When we come back, I want to get David's opinion on some of the other ways we can increase revenue in the United States through other types of taxes, and particularly the federal estate tax. We talk about the income tax being like a roller coaster ride over time since it first was instated. But the federal estate tax is no different, and what's going to happen at the end of 2026 and what could happen down the road, and just something else that people need to keep their eyes open for. We'll be right back at Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone, to Your Money with David Hayes. David McKnight, the author of Power of Zero. Dave, what's give the listeners some insight on other books that you've written. Of course, Look Before You Lerp is one. You've revised Power of Zero to update that. What else is going on in your world, in your book writing world?
I got a book coming out probably in the next 6 months called the working title is Guru, in which I basically set my sights on the mainstream financial gurus. I talk about Dave Ramsey, Susie Orman, Clark Howard, Ramit Sethi, Ken Fisher, the white coat investor. And I talk about what I call a guru gap. And gurus, by definition, are trying to appeal to as broad an audience as possible. And so in an effort to do so, they have to, a lot of times, they have to paint everything with a very broad brush, you know, paint by the numbers, one size fits all advice. Right. And so the problem is when you speak in vagaries like that, people that are financially responsible, they've saved well, they're sophisticated investors. That advice is not enough to help those people achieve their retirement goals. And so where the guru's advice stops and where people need to be and able to get to where they want to go, there's a gap in there. And I call that the guru gap. And so I identify in my book a lot of different areas where, you know, frankly, because of their one size fits all approach, they give short shrift to a lot of different areas that can help some of those sophisticated investors. So I talk about what those gaps are, how to bridge those gaps, and how to, you know, advance the dialogue around sustainable retirement strategies.
I love that, the guru gap. It's so true. I mean, I listen to Dave Ramsey's on this station that I'm on, and I loved it. I love what he's done for America and helping them realize how to get and stay out of debt. But some of the things that he says, I'm like, I shake my head. I'm like, okay, you're telling me that if you average 8 to 12% in a growth mutual fund that you can take 8 to 10. I'm like, no, that's not the way it works. He doesn't talk about sequence risk. He doesn't talk about all this stuff that you've got to, when rubber meets the road, you need a specialist. You need someone that does it every day. I love that. I can't wait to get, when's it scheduled to be out? Penguin doing it again?
We're shopping it around to different publishers right now. So we'll see. It's there's no guarantee that Penguin Random House will go for it because it's a very controversial topic.
And I bet.
I'm trying to do it in a very even-handed, deferential way, but there's no getting around the fact that I'm setting my sights on some pretty important people in the publishing world, and so we'll see how that goes.
That's going to be great. All right. We know we're in debt up to our nose, actually over our head. We're swimming in debt as a country. We know that tax rates are going to have to go up. We focus on income taxes because that's the thing that we can control as individuals the most, is how to move money into tax-free. But one thing, I mean, I've talked about federal sales tax. I've talked about sin taxes, of gas taxes. I mean, if you want to push people to electric cars, put a freaking $3 gas tax on, right? And make gas $6 or $8 a gallon. I mean, there's a lot of different ways, but one thing that sticks out to me is the federal estate tax. In 1994, when I first started, if you had $600,000 or more, and that included your home and included the cash, the proceeds on your life insurance, then you were subject to federal estate tax, which means anything over that, you'd be taxed up to 45%. Well, that went to $1 million, and then it went to $2 million, then it went to $5 million, then it went to $10 million. And under Bush, and then it went away completely. In 2010, I believe the federal estate tax went to zero. And that's the year George Steinbrenner died, by the way. Got away with the paying zero in federal estate tax, at least his family did. Then it went back to five and then two. And I mean, it's been all over the place. It went back to 10 and then 12 and then 22. Then it went to 22, 24 million under the tax cuts of 2017. And in 2026, it's going to revert back and get back to even. So the IRS has came out and said, listen, we will not claw back on any big planning that you do during this period. So if you do some shifting, you know, irrevocable trust, all this kind of planning that you can do at a high level, we will not claw back. But Dave, that federal estate tax has been nothing but a roller coaster like our income taxes have been forever.
Yeah. And I think that if you know, it's hard to hit a moving target in the dark, right? But I think that there's some overarching principles that people can sort of live by. And number one is, the more we go into a future where the tax, where debt increases, and you know, the whole financial situation compounds for the worse, the more likely that tax rates are going to go up, and not simply on the middle class. I know that the middle class, I mean, I make the case that they're gonna have to broaden the tax base so much just to be able to come up with the revenue to pay for all this stuff. But it's going to fall disproportionately on the weight of the rich. And so if you feel like that you are in a situation where you're going to have substantial means and you're not going to be able to spend it all during your lifetime, there is an outsized chance that that estate tax exemption could go down to as low as what it's been in the past to help pay for the types of, you know, help bridge the fiscal shortfall in our country, which is massive. I mean, David or Larry Kotlikoff out of Boston University has suggested that we have to have $239 trillion sitting in a bank account today earning treasury rates to be able to pay for all the stuff that we promised that we can't afford to pay. So if you think that, you know, if you got more than $5 million and you're dying, that eventually the government won't want to take a chunk of that to help defray the cost of all these programs, I think you're up in the night. So I think that you have to plan as if they are likely to confiscate that money, you know, upon death, or at least a portion of it.
And it's even a double whammy if it's in deferred accounts like IRAs or 401ks. If you have $10 million bucks in deferred accounts, and the federal estate tax goes back to say $2 million bucks or $5 million bucks, and anything over that is taxed at 50%. Well, only place I have to go, folks, is my IRA. So I'm going to head over there and I'll get that $2.5 million bucks that you owe you. You pull it out, and guess what? They say, wait a second, there's more. You've got to pay tax on that $2.5 million. And you say, oh, gosh, so you have to go back to the well. And it's like this never-ending back and forth. And Ed Slott used to do a great piece on how to back in the day, make an IRA go to $1 by playing that game. And it doesn't work exactly that way, folks, but it is kind of an interesting thing to do. You've had so many great podcasts, and I was pulling some stuff from your website. And it says, it's just some of the things, and we've discussed some of this, why 2030 is such an important date and the power of zero worldview. And you really talk about budgeting in there, like how budgets are created, which is interesting, how quickly people should shift money to tax-free. I like this one. If you were president, how would you solve the nation's fiscal problems? Tell us about that one.
That was a long time ago. I can remember the broad strokes of that podcast. I basically said that I would be a one-term president, because I know that whatever I proposed would tick off so many different people that there's no way I would ever get elected for a second term. But basically, it would be, I would raise revenue and I would cut expenses, and I would do it starting today. And I would lay out for the American public. I would spend my 4 years touring the country, making a case to the public, sort of like what David Walker's been doing for the last 8 years or so. I would just do this fiscal wake-up tour, but as president of the United States, and I would go visit, you know, every single state, and I would hopefully draw stadiums full of people, and I would talk to them about how we're sort of marching into this financial apocalypse and that we got to make some tough decisions and we have to make them soon. And every year that goes by where we don't make these tough decisions means that our, you know, either ourselves or our kids or grandkids are going to have to live in a world where they give 50% of their revenue, of their income to the IRS. They got to work the first 6 months of the year for the IRS before they earn $1 for themselves. So that's how I would handle it. I would just fall on my sword, one term president, and just get the word out.
Be done. You know, had we done something when David Walker basically retired, he was under Clinton and Bush as the comptroller of the United States of America, I believe back in 07-ish. That's when he was on Time and he was on 60 Minutes and he was all over the place and people watched it and they were like, what? Had we done something then, it would have been so much easier because just like every problem, the longer you wait to deal with it, the bigger and harder it becomes to solve. So I think it would take someone with some real kahunas to go in there and say, you know what? Today's the day and here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to fix this, fix that, and do this and do that. And they're going to say, all right, go for it. And then the things you do makes people so mad and so angry that you would not be reelected. Guaranteed. I actually had around my hometown. There was a time where I was convinced I would accept the responsibility of mayor. And people were like, you're going to run for mayor? I'm saying, no, I'm not going to run for anything, but I will accept the responsibility. And here's the things that I'll do. Number one, I'm going to fix our homeless problem. Two, I'm going to make our police force the biggest and baddest. People want to beg to come in, not beg to leave. I'm going to cut expenses and lower taxes, and I'm only going to do it one time, and I'll do it for free. And everyone that I told that to would say, oh, my gosh, well, I said it so much to so many people. So, Dave, you may be getting the same question. People would literally walk up to me and say, are you running for mayor? And I'm like, maybe. Well, then my wife said, there's too many serious comments going on out here. She goes, and I think that if anyone, you cannot do this, number one. You can't do it to me because if anyone said anything negative towards you, I'd want to kill them. And I said, well, that's why I married you, to have my back. So for that reason, I'm out, like Shark Tank or something like that. I'm with you. I think your wife might kill someone, too, if people said too many bad things about you. And you've got enough kids. You've got a little army. I wouldn't want to take that McKnight family.
I've got a baseball team of players at my back. So, yeah.
I love it.
For what it's worth, Dave, I would vote for you. If I were a denizen of your town and you ran, I would vote for you.
I appreciate that. I'm afraid I might have a few others too, and I'd have to accept the job and actually be on a schedule. All right, let's take a break. We're going to come back and wrap up the show. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes, the one and only David McKnight, the author of Power of Zero, and a new book coming out called The Guru, I think you said, or The Guru Gap.
Guru.
The Guru.
No, just Guru. Chapter one is The Guru Gap, but the title is Guru. That's the working title. Publishers could always change it, but that's the one I'm going with for now.
So the theme of today's show and the theme of really your entire message is, number one, understand where we are as a country. Number two, if you don't believe this can happen, then look at our past, right? Look at our history. If you don't think taxes can double, look at our past. It's happened before. It's been there before. And the other thing is you didn't do something about it. So hopefully what you do and what I've been able to do, hopefully here in the community, is get people to move. And they've made it pretty easy on us. They've given us Roth 401ks. They've given us Roth IRAs. They've given us the most coveted tax code is tax code, 7702 or something like that, the treatment of life insurance. That one, I use it myself, and I know you do as well. And people are like, what do? I cram as much money into my life insurance policy as possible with the lowest amount of death benefit to keep that gap so it's always tax-free, gross tax-free. I get to take it out tax-free. I die, it's tax-free. Dave, I think life insurance, annuity, any of these insurance products are certainly getting some traction that they used to not get because people are becoming aware of what's available to them.
Well, this is one of the reasons why I'm writing this book, because universally, these financial gurus, when you see them online, be it Susie Orman, Dave Ramsey says the only people that do cash value life insurance either easy dupes or they just haven't researched it. And Susie Orman says if
it's people with a lot of money. It's people with a lot of money that do it.
Right. Susie Orman says if anybody ever talks to you about life insurance, you're to shut down the conversation and never talk to that person again. So on the other side of the ledger, you have Ed Slott, who is a CPA, who the USA Today called America's IRA expert. I mean, he's been on PBS all across the country. He says life insurance is the single greatest benefit in the IRS tax code. So that tells us that somebody is either speaking in vagaries and just doesn't want to address it, or and someone on the other side actually does understand it and is willing to go on record saying there is some real value behind a policy when used and structured in the right way, which you referenced. You get as little death benefit as the IRS requires of you. You stuff as much money into it as the IRS allows. And you're sort of mimicking all of the tax-free benefits of the Roth IRA without any of the limitations of the Roth IRA. And you're getting a death benefit that doubles as long-term care. So there's some real benefit. Is it your entire retirement plan? Like maybe sometimes you see on TikTok. No, it's not a silver bullet. It's not a panacea. But it is a wonderful complement to all of the other tax-free streams of income that we've talked about today.
It's just a piece of my pie as well. And, you know, when I look at I have one son, like I always thank you for bailing me out and helping the demographic trend, although you are in Puerto Rico, not in the United States. So anyway, but I'm like my son, my mom used to say, thank God I had one girl because someone would take care of me when I got old. She had three boys and one girl. And I'm like, I have one son. There's no chance he's ever going to take care of us. So I told him I'm going to have as much money as possible, and a lot of it's through the insurance programs, that you can put me up in the Taj Mahal, me and your mom. And that's why I have so much. I have so much not only for the tax-free accumulation that I get, but also a ton for long-term care. You mentioned that. That's something where I can accelerate my benefit ahead of time, tax-free. I can pay whoever I want to pay. I don't have to go into a facility. These are great, great benefits. And you cover these in your podcast, so people need to check it out. So, Dave, it's something that people just need to know about and hear it from a true guru.
That's right. And the real thing, and the thing that you mentioned there that people underestimate is long-term care. I mean, if you're over age 50, I guarantee that you and your spouse have four of something. What do you have? You got four parents, right? And what's the likelihood that one of those parents is going through a long-term care event even as we speak? It's pretty high. And so what people around this age between 50 and 60, they're always starting to ask themselves a question, this burning platform. What do I do about long-term care? And the traditional approach was you pay for an expensive long-term care policy where it's a use it or lose it. You die peacefully in your sleep, never having used it, and it goes to pay for someone else's long-term care, at least with the life insurance plan. If you die peaceful in your sleep, never having needed it, someone's still getting a death benefit, probably your kids or your grandkids.
Perfect. David McKnight's been my guest, folks. Follow him on everything. Just Google David McKnight and you can figure out where he is and what he's up to, and listen to his podcast. Just save it and put on the alerts and it'll pop up in your car when it's ready to listen to. They're not super long. They're like mine. They get to the point, get after it, and then boom. And Dave, I appreciate you upgrading your equipment, I think, last year, because when you first started, I thought you were in your garage or a can somewhere.
Yeah, I was in the equivalent of my garage. Yeah. But it was doing a lot better now.
But it's good stuff. So, Dave, thanks so much for being part of the show. I'm sure I'll see you around at an event or two in 2024. Maybe an Ed Slott event again. Maybe one of these other things we all end up at. So, I appreciate you very much. And keep wearing the shoes, dude. You look good in them.
Sounds good, man.
All right.
Appreciate you.
We're going to see you. Guys, we're going to take the long break. Hope everyone has a fantastic weekend. The good news is Indiana's not playing any football this weekend, so we don't have to watch that again. And listen, we're going to have a great weekend, great weather. It's going to be fantastic. So have a good one. I'll be back next week with another guest. This is Your Money with David Hayes.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.